Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm absolutely delighted that you're able to join us today. And we have a wonderful guest, a guest who's going to be talking about something that, my goodness, all of us at one time or another just seem to be plagued with, and that is the past. Whether it is something for ourselves, it's very personal, maybe it's relating to someone that we've loved. I think his book, The Power of Your Past, The Art of Recalling, Reclaiming, and Recasting, those experiences, well, they can really make a difference. I want to welcome the author, John Schuster, to the show. Hello, John.
Hey, Donna. Great to be here.
Well, it's a delight having you as a guest today. You're a man that is very much a coaching professional. In fact, you serve on the faculty at Columbia University and the Hudson Institute of Santa Barbara, and you're the coach in residence with Merrick and Company, the largest CEO mentoring firm in the world, and you were voted Trainer of the Year by the Kansas City chapter of the American Society of Training and Development. And my goodness, there's just so many things that you've done. The power of the past. When you started the book, you talk about a very personal experience you had with your mother as she was dying. In what way was this a stimulus for you to put together a book dealing with the past?
Well, my mom was a huge influence on me, Donna. Thanks for that great question. The way I had used my memories throughout my life was in many ways informed by my mom. And sure enough, on her, in her last few days, literally on her deathbed, having my last really darling and touching conversation with her, we go back through her memories, and it was delightful because one more time she kind of said, here's how my life has been. Here's all the great experiences I've had that were fun and enriching and that made me who I am. So it was an impetus to, certainly I wanted to start my book.
John, are you still with me?
I sure am, yeah.
Okay, because your voice just cut out all of a sudden. I couldn't figure out what happened to you. Okay.
Oh, sorry about that. I started the story with my mom because it was such a powerful story for me, Donna.
Well, that's terrific. Now, many people are burdened with their past. As a counselor, I've encountered so many individuals. I know I went through some experiences of my own that literally plagued me for years, and I've had so many clients that I've interacted with that have this burden. It's like a giant mental backpack that is just so stuffed, and they don't know how to lay it down. They don't know how to empty out that backpack so that they don't carry all of these regrets, concerns, judgments. There are so many different words we could bring to this. Have you a personal story to relate regarding something that you realized that you needed to dump out of your mental backpack?
Yeah, I do, Donna. Probably one of the big ones was I had a tendency to be a workaholic in my 30s and 40s. My business was great, and I loved my business, but the tendency was for me to overwork. And I wondered where that came from, because my wife is suffering from this, and I'm taking on too many tasks. And, of course, it had to do with me trying to overachieve when I was younger to get my parents' kind of love. And the story was my younger sister came home with a report card, and my mom said, is that a straight A? I mean, my younger sister said, hey, Mom, is that a straight A? Because when she heard the word Donna, she always heard straight A in front of it, which meant the older brother and sister were supposed to be perfect at school, see?
Mm-hmm.
So here I am in my 40s, and I'm still trying to prove my lovability by being, by overworking. So I had to go back and reconsider and reinterpret those events. My parents loved me. I was glad to achieve, but I had taken it way too far.
We are coming upon a date that is very, very significant in the annals of American history, and that is 9/11. There are many people that, even today, after these many years, carry trauma with them. They were on the site. There are stories that are told over and over and over again. How can someone who has gone through that kind of trauma, like 9/11, rework it so that it is leveraged in a positive way and not something that emotionally just depletes them and wipes them out?
Yeah, it's a great, great question. I'm going to be in New York City, believe it or not, on 9/11. So
incredible.
I'll be around all that. Yeah, incredible that I'm going to be there. First of all, I'm not a therapist, and this book is not a substitute for therapy. So you got to keep that in mind. But I wrote it because it's about self-awareness, and even people who are in therapy can't be with a therapist 24/7. So there's work we can all do. So I warn people in the book. I say, please get a help and some professional support if you need to. But the shift eventually becomes, and grief counselors know this, people who work with post-traumatic stress syndrome know this, it's when you eventually can with positive imagery in your mind, imagery, the memories themselves. And you never let the negatives never go away, but you take the power out of them. It's called depotentiating. You take the power out of being always seeing the negatives, and instead you recall your loved one with a sense of beauty. I do think, though, with the people with super traumas, like Holocaust victims, and there's such amazing trauma there that it probably is better not to over-revisit your past. Visit it, know it's a painful place, and there's probably some things that are appropriate for you to just put aside and say, okay, I know it's there. I don't need to dig into that anymore.
I love a quote that you have in your book by Oscar Wilde. It reads as follows: do not be afraid of the past. If people tell you that it is irrevocable, do not believe them. The past, the present, and the future are but one moment in the sight of God. Time and space are merely accidental conditions of a thought. The imagination can transcend them. Things also are in their essence what we choose to make them. Those are tremendously wise words by a very famous author.
Yeah, aren't they beautiful, beautiful words? This notion that the past, present, and future have to do with our imagination. Here's how the neurophysiology has caught up to that. So Oscar Wilde wrote that when he was in prison, by the way, and had lost the joyous part of his life, and he's confronting, how do I make meaning out of my life? And he wrote those beautiful words. So because our memories aren't particularly accurate, that's what we know. We know our memories aren't accurate. So why would we want to be trapped by bad interpretations or meanings from memories that aren't particularly accurate anyway? So the good news is your past is irrevocable. You have to, like if you've made mistakes, and all of us do, you have to accept the consequences and be responsible and accountable for your past. At the same time, the past has this kind of malleable quality where we can reinterpret it and bring wisdom to it and say, ah, that's what that's about. That's how what this means for me now. And so that's what Wilde is after, is we can work with our past to make it work for us instead of against us.
You have an exercise in your book, The Power of Your Past, which I thought was intriguing. It is one where you say, reflect on your mistakes. Oh, boy. Most people would say, you have got to be kidding. They'd circle the globe at least 45 times. Which one do you want me to pick? And this is something where your questions are very interesting, and it's not unlike what you've just said. The question is, how do you use your past well? What are some examples? And which of the six errors of underuse and misuse do you tend to make the most? Avoid, numb out, ignore, erase, pathologize, romanticize, sentimentalize, or demonize, victimize. And what makes you think that? It's really a tough space to be able to get to the point, and I'll use the word victim, of saying, I don't want to own this anymore. I don't need to go through the victim route. I don't need to play that part anymore. I want to eliminate. That really takes being awake to not do that, because it's so easy to put blame.
Yeah, it's really being awake, and it's really being responsible. So most of us, I love the line, the truth will set you free, but first it'll make you mad, you know. And so in our 20s and 30s, we often get mad at our parents because you start to see the damage they did. Then you realize, oh, wait a minute, they tried their best, and I got to love them, and they suffered more from their limitations than I ever did. And so that's when you start to shift from victim to, I'm an adult now. I don't have, you know, they did their best. And we can do that with every story, every bad boss, every divorce where you turned into enemies instead of what used to be a friendship. All that can be, quote, forgiven. And then you have to forgive others and yourself. So there's spiritual work in here, Donna, where you don't demonize others. You don't victimize yourself. You don't sentimentalize. My problem, Donna, was I sentimentalized. I made everything kind of cute and fun, and it was like looking at little teddy bears. I took the truth and the power out of my past by not saying, boy, that was really bad. I suffered in that one. And so that's where your positivity can actually work against you sometimes.
That's a very good point. Now, how did you dump that process? I know we have some listeners listening to this, and they're going to say, okay. You say, how did you, you made it like a pink fuzzy bunny. That's wonderful, but how do you dump it? How do you get past the pink fuzzy bunny attitude and say, good Lord, I got a rock here, and it's 50,000 tons?
That's a great question. See, what I listen for, literally, I've heard so many people, and I used to hear myself, how's your past? Oh, it's great. It was, I've been had a great... And I finally had one of my teachers, Peter Block, say, John, you diminish the suffering and the work you've done. You diminish it. And so I realized, I did a lot of work to get to this point, and I'm not going to just let people off hook. So that straight A story I told you about earlier, my mom's telling that story she's probably telling that story for the 50th time. I'm in my late 40s, so I'm in my early 60s now. So I hear this story, and I finally realize, the straight A. Oh, your sister said straight A. Is that a straight A? And we laugh. Finally realize that's not all funny. I suffered through overachieving. I ruined my senior year of college. I did a number of things here to try to, and I'm hurting my family right now by overworking. So that's not all funny. And I stopped laughing. I didn't tell my parents about it because they were kind of too old for me to say, here's how you messed up. But I went and talked to my older sister, Donna, and I said, hey, Elaine, do you hear this story in here? This story is really about how you and I did ourselves some damage to try to earn love, and that's an end game that doesn't work out so well. So I had to admit it. I took that fuzzy bunny ha-ha story, and I said, ouch, there's pain in there. And then I took the pain, and I probably put it through my heart, talked to another loved one about it, my spouse, my sister. And then I just, you put it through your heart, and you say, wait a minute, what's this about? I suffered. Move on. Have empathy for other people who have this same problem. So that's what you go to is empathy.
I really like the idea of being able to look upon the past as something that is going to give you leverage. And I, just from my own personal experience, I know from the way I was raised is, boy, if life has been ugly, you just suck it up. That's the way it is. But like you just expressed, you have all of this pain inside that's not there. So really, there needs to be some kind of an outlet, and then to be able to stand back and look at it. I mean, if something stinks, it stinks. If anybody's ever come across a dead salmon that's been laying out, or a fish of any kind that's been laying outside for 3 days, and you say, oh, isn't that the sweetest smelling perfume that's ever graced your nostril? I mean, if you say yes, you're out of your blooming mind. I mean, this stuff really stinks. So life sometimes is downright ugly. It is hideous. Mm-hmm. And to lie about it, when stuff's beautiful, it's beautiful. But when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And I know that it's very difficult in many societal situations for people, if they're honest and they tell the truth, it's like, oh, no, you're not supposed to do that. That's just, again, we get back to the pink bunny fluff stuff. And it is a real tough time for anyone when someone asks them a question, to be totally direct and honest about maybe what they've gone through in their past, because they'll go, gee whiz, nobody will understand. What they don't realize is, my Lord, someone may walk up to them and say, oh, I'm so glad you said that. I think of Oprah Winfrey. Look at what this woman received in
That's the way of compassion
when she talked about her personal experience of being raped and the things that she went through as a young black woman. I mean, this stuff is vile.
Yeah, great example of someone who tapped and used her suffering to help others escape and relieve their own suffering. So that's where I couldn't agree more that there's parts of life that are just tough, and tougher. And unless we confront those with honesty, we take the power out of our own lives. And we've all seen people who've read too many positive mental attitude books, you know, and they're living on the surface of themselves, carrying around this pain. And then it's interesting, in my book, I also spend a lot of time, in chapter 4 of the book is about amplify these positives. Don't forget that, and I see a lot of people do that too, Donna, where there's these huge identity-forming positives in their life that they forget. And there's energy in our stories. Just like there's negative energy bottled up, there's positive energy bottled up in these great stories. When we go to reunions, for instance, with our families or with our classmates, we tell stories and we get all, you know, just the energy comes back to us. And so that's what you want. You want a balance and you want the truth to emerge so that you can be who you're really supposed to be.
And I think that is so empowering, because too many times we don't know how to look at ourselves. And so when you have a chance to talk to someone that's maybe known you in the past, I mean, I've had experiences with people that I haven't seen for years, and they'll turn and make a comment to someone and say, well, I know this is what she did, and it was so wonderful, and I thought, I did this? You've got to be kidding. But, you know,
they
remember these things, and I think that's what we don't remember. It's so much easier for us to accept what we look at as our weaknesses, our horrible mistakes, instead of understanding that part of those mistakes had to happen. There's no way in God's world that you can go through life without making them. It's what you do with them, and I know that's an adage that people use frequently, but it's true. It's how are you going to make that into something that's solid, and that's what your book, The Power of Your Past, can assist people in understanding.
Well, I hope so, Donna. That was my intent, is that we all have these histories, and good things shaped us and bad things shaped us, and that what can you do to make the most out of your history instead of it controlling you? You start to use it. And it's a beautiful process when you see people growing and maturing, because you know at some level that's what they've done. They've somehow incorporated a piece of themselves that had been outside of themselves. It's now inside. They're more conscious. They're more awake. I think people get three things from working with their history. They get their identity. They know who they are. They get their potential. They know what they're really capable of. And the third thing they get is self-direction. They get, here's what I'm supposed to do. So, you know, the premise is kind of, to get where you want to go, you've got to know where you've been. And hence, let's work with our histories with imagination and not just, as a place with facts or dead energy, because it's not dead, it's alive.
You use in chapter 4, right at the beginning of it, you say reclaim. You talk about the Bourne identity. And, of course, that's one of my husband's favorite series of movies. He just loves the Bourne movies. And there is a scene that you pulled out of the movie where Bourne is in a state of amnesia. He doesn't know who he is. Talk about that for a minute, because that's a very good example.
Yeah, I think I found amnesia everywhere. All these novels are based upon characters with amnesia. And, of course, that's the metaphor for all of us. We're all Jason Bourne. We all end up, you know, in our 30-somethings or 40-somethings. Here I am, I'm vice president of Overhead at something. And what am I doing here? Who am I really? And so in the movie, he starts noticing all these facts, like a super CIA sleuthy kind of super spy. And he says, why do I recognize all this stuff? How did I get these skills? What's that all about? And so in many ways, it's the same question for all of us is, here I am, but what's this all about? And what have I forgotten about who I really am? And that's where the metaphor of amnesia comes in. So I think I say that I'll use the idea of amnesia a lot in the book. Amnesia is a metaphor. You being the hero of your own story, that's not a metaphor. That's reality. And how are you and Jason Bourne going to figure out who you are? So,
one of the individuals that you speak of in your book is David Dotlick. And you say he's written a number of books on leadership. He had an experience when he was 25 that could have made him just crawl into a hole and never come out again. Tell us what that was.
Yeah, interviewing David was great. He lives up in Portland, and he told me this forming story of his life. He was studying some research thing. I forget what it was. He was down in South Africa studying it, and he and a friend decided to take an excursion, rent or buy two vans, and to take people from South Africa up to the Sahara on all of these little roads through Africa, and it was like weeks and weeks of travel. Well, what he found out was he got a lot of people to do it, paid him money, and then they all started fighting and having conflict. So it was this human laboratory of conflict and intensity, and he said, oh, it was so hard. Here I am, the leader of this place, people fighting all day long. And he said, of course, that's when he got hooked on studying human behavior. And so he took that very sour experience, and it shaped him into becoming a great leadership coach, a great human being who helps other leaders grow. So,
you also have a gentleman that his name is Joe, and you consider him a leader, which he is. It's Joe Cunningham, and he told you a story about his past, and it was a pretty hard one. Tell us about Joe.
Mm-hmm. It was really touching. It was really touching. Well, Joe is, I think, a couple of relatives show up in my book. Joe is one of my heroes, and he's my cousin, my older cousin from this little town in Waukon, Iowa, Ella McKee County, northeast corner of Iowa. And he grew up in tough conditions on the edge of poverty with his four brothers and sisters in this little town. And he had to try to make meaning out of what did it mean not to have things that all the other kids had, and just be on the edge of poverty, and his dad trying to provide for him, but not doing the best job because of a variety of factors. So he writes about how that shaped him, that there was a kind of a shame and an exclusion, that well, he wasn't like the other kids, and they knew it. And he said what he did was he took that pain and that shame, and he realized he was going to have empathy for other people. And when he started to succeed, which he did, he became a pharmacist, Donna. He and his brothers and sisters were going to exemplify the kind of human being who would always understand what it meant for people who were less fortunate than they were. And they've been community leaders since, and Joe's been a big father figure in this small, small town, 3,500 people up in the county seat of in the northeastern county of Iowa. It's a beautiful story of someone who took his difficult past and turned it into an asset for himself and the whole community.
William Appleman Williams is a gentleman that you quoted in your book, and he said, the historical experience is not one of staying in the present and looking back. Rather, it is one of going back into the past and returning to the present with a wider and more intense consciousness of the restrictions of a former outlook. We return with a broader awareness of the alternatives open to us and armed with a sharper perspective with which to make our choices. In this manner, it is possible to loosen the clutch of the dead hand of the past and transform it into a living tool for the present and the future. You have a chapter that talks about channeling the past. Many individuals have gone through tremendous suffering. When we were first talking at the very beginning of the show, it was about various things that affect people, traumas, etc. How can someone use their suffering to grow from? I mean, I'm not asking people to go out and become martyrs, because the only martyrs I know mm-hmm. of are dead. So I want you to not take on that kind of an attitude. But,
yeah.
You know, I don't know of anybody that doesn't have pain and suffering on some level. So
right.
How can you leverage that?
Yeah, well, I think the great, great challenge that we face, especially as we age. So, but it certainly happens to younger people as well. I watched my 30-something daughter-in-law lose her mom a couple years ago after a terrible battle with cancer. So we lose things. Parts of us are lost along our journey, whether it's your health or your some habit or a friend that goes or a parent. And so how do you handle loss becomes one of the great spiritual, psychological questions in your life. And the grief counselors all know this, kind of like what you were talking about with 9/11. They know the stages you go through. What you need to do with loss is somehow confront it with your imagination and with your heart so that your heart grows instead of shrinks. Because if you don't grow your heart, it shrinks and you get bitter. You become bitter over the losses. And so this is where, again, talking it through, and I give examples of Nelson Mandela and other who are these big historical figures. But I also give the woman I knew from the Columbia coaching program, Nicole, who lost her baby at 24 hours after day one. And she just talked about what it meant to go through the suffering of having become a mom and then having your baby taken away at 24 hours when your hormones are all at their peak of maternal nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful story. And so most of us don't have that kind of trauma, but we have suffering. And I want people not to think suffering is abnormal or bad. It's actually use suffering to grow your heart. And I put some stages that you go through in the book and hopefully help people think it through that way.
Well, I really like a paragraph in your book relative to this. You see, after you've contemplated an image that weighs heavily on your heart, you might want to go to a superhero movie, visit a joke site on the Internet, or post a stupid picture on your profile, or be like the Irish at wakes who suffer loss and really have a good time. As the old description goes, at your funeral, after they honor you with tears and kind words, they throw dirt on your face and go back to the house to eat potato salad. I mean, I really liked that section. I thought, this is really getting down to the truth of it. Because it, you know, I just thought that was just so very, very appropriate. I know, John, that you have a website that people can go to. Can you tell us what it is?
Yeah, it's johnpschuster.com, and J-O-H-N-P-S-C-H. U-S-T-E-R, and that's where people can go and catch a blog and find out more about the book.
John, as we're closing out our chat today, what message would you like to leave my listeners? The power of your past, the art of recalling, reclaiming, and casting has so much in it. There's a lot for someone to work with. It could be a wonderful companion if a person's going through a transition or if they feel like they're stuck and they're just with this mental backpack that's just weighing them down. What would you like to leave them with in thought today?
Yeah, well, the final thought, Donna, and thanks for your wonderful interview and so knowing the book so well. Appreciate that. But my final thought would be along the lines of, with some imagination and courage, it takes some courage, you can really find much more energy, much more growth coming out of your past than anyone's ever taught you to do. And if you spend the time being reflective, it's a joyous and a great opportunity to get more of who you really are back under your control. That's what you're really after. And that's what working with your past gets you. It gets you more of you. And that's my hope for all of us.
This is Donna Sebo. My guest today has been John P. Schuster. His book is loaded with stories. He's got suggestions. He's got various kinds of exercises that you can do for yourself. It's a type of book that when you read it, I'd say read it through once and then go back and maybe just take a chapter at a time and have a journal of some kind handy and just write down some things, because many times what blocks us are the illusions that we create in our mind's file cabinet about the past. And when we keep regurgitating in the wrong stuff, we don't really understand how we can take it and make it work for us so that it is going to empower us, not keep us down. Because the past, my goodness, it's already dead in the water. But in your mind, it may not be. And most of us carry in our mental backpacks stuff that we need to dump out and get rid of so we can move on from where we are to where we really want to be. The Power of Your Past, The Art of Recalling, Reclaiming, and Recasting. John P. Schuster has been my guest. John, thank you so much, and I look forward to your next book.
Thanks, Donna. You really get it, and it's been a real joy.
Thank you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, we've got some wonderful music for you, so don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Our light was brighter than the shadows of doubt. We have the kind of love singers love to sing about. Running in our veins, burning in our bones. Wider than the Great Plains, carved in hard stone. All the mountains fall down, the rivers run dry. Your heart changed on me, and I'll never know why. Question banging around in my mind. Tell me, where does love go? Set like the sun, melted like the spring snow. Spitting out gravel out on Highway 93. With the wind crying out, ain't no more you and me. Tell me, where does love go?
Does love go? I know it's a surprise, isn't it? Well, we have a very special guest today. His name is Alex Call, and I became aware of Alex's music just last week by his PR person, Sherry Rosen, and it's my delight that with his busy schedule, we have been able to have him on the show today. And Alex, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Your music is dynamic, it's vibrant, and what I really love are your lyrics. Alex, you've got to tell us about your background. Where are you from? Where are you? How did you get into music? Tell us a little bit about you.
All right. Well, I'm from just north of San Francisco, Marin County, Mill Valley, California. And, boy, I started playing when I was a kid. You know, I was one of those little skinny kids with glasses who got pushed around. So I went to a dance, and I saw a band playing, and they were really cool, and I loved music. And nobody hassled them, and they got girls. So I went, this is for me. So I just kind of went from there. You know, I was I'm a child of the 60s, so I was there on top of the psychedelic scene in the late 60s, and then went to London in the 70s and saw all the punk music and all that, and then the 80s, you know, more rock and roll back in San Francisco and L.A. I currently live in Nashville.
Well, I am so impressed with your lyrics. Where does love go? What stimulated the lyrics for this song?
You know, it's funny because, you know, I read a lot of mythology, and in the middle of there's a bridge that says, tie me to the mast and set me on the sea. So I had this kind of, you know, vision of Odysseus, you know, searching for love on this ocean. So I don't know. You know, I just hear things in my head. My method of writing is to play guitar and just start singing and see what comes out. And that's basically what I do. I don't sit around with pads of paper and sculpt lyrics, not until I need to. You know, once I get, you know, to where I have something I really like, then I'll sit there and I'll really work on lyrics as diligently as I can.
Now, most musicians are not very good with lyrics. They might be very good in working with certain instrumentation, but to be able to write lyrics seems to be a very special gift. When did you discover that you could do both, that you were able to work with music composition as well as do as the lyrics and perform at the, you know, all of this? It's the whole package.
Well, you know, actually, I want to refute what you say about players not being able to write. I know a lot of wonderful players who write beautifully. I just think for some of us, and this was true from when I was a kid, when I was 11 years old and I started writing songs, I played and wrote at the same time. And that's just the way I do it. I've actually, my famous song, 8675309, that was just, everybody asked me where that number came from. It was just came when I was playing guitar and it just popped out of my mouth. So, I'm a fairly, semi-literate person anyway. You know, I read a lot. I've studied history a lot. My mother was a big reader. I grew up in a reading household and a musical household. So for me, the two things have always belonged together. And plus, I've always wanted to have a microphone where I could talk to the world and, you know, put my ideas out there. So music allows me to do that.
Oh, that is so true. Music really is a universal language. You have a song called No Place for Hate, and that's on track 4, I believe, and I really want to play that, because that is the lyrics on that are so significant. So we're going to be playing about a minute or so of that. So sit back, everybody, and just enjoy these very, very special lyrics, and we'll take and play it right now.
There are brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, uncles and aunts, sons and daughters, grandmas and grandpas, cousins and in-laws, people we're close to, lovers and friends. There are neighbors and grocers and plumbers and teachers, policemen and bakers, busy shopkeepers, firemen, doctors, lawyers and preachers, so many people on whom we depend.
there are no Argentinians, no Palestinians, no Chinese, no Burmese, no Americans, no Hutus, no Tutsis, no Irish, no Greeks, no Russians, Koreans, Israelis, or Germans, no Pakistanis, no French or Afghanis, no English, Italians, Iraqis, Somalis, no hijack minutes.
What spurred you to write this? Because you have just touched on all ethnic groups, and it doesn't make any difference. You just pull it out, and it's in this song.
I got them all in there.
You have.
I didn't spare anybody. I picked on everybody in that song because I think that it's my view that the commonalities that hold people together in communities and nations and groups are much more important than the trivial differences that bring us to kill each other. And you know, to me it's quite obvious, and to a number of us, but some people still aren't getting it. And so we need to keep talking about it. You know, it's the cause of our times. It's, you know, it's the reason why we have so much trouble around the world. And so we need to work on it, you know.
I agree.
Not enough of that stuff. That's the hatred of ancient history stuff.
Absolutely. And I really find that it's so clear. And that's one of the things that I like about your lyrics. You have love songs, you have songs about all kinds of things, and there's one you have called Standing on Your Head, which I just thought was a hoot.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I thought that was
sort
really
of my Magritte song, you know? It's like, you know, this Magritte painting, like where everybody's upside down, you know?
Yes.
That was a reaction that I had to when we started going to these big wars in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a while there, everyone was afraid to speak out against them because there was so much fear in this country. And I felt, especially living here in the South, where, you know, we had real strong reactionary people, you know, I just felt like I was the only one who was awake sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I wrote that song.
Yes, it's sometimes very difficult to break away from certain paradigms, but there is a song that you wrote regarding 9/11, and we're going to play that. And I'm going to want to hear your story. So, Seth, if you will, just go ahead and put that in.
I never dreamed you would just go away. I always believed we'd have another day. The morning you left was just like all the rest. Now all I have is my faith that heaven knows best. When the sun lifts up the dawn, and I know I must go on, I think of you. Tears I cried finally heal the sky. My heart will live again when from out of nowhere, baby, I found you.
Alex, this is such a moving song.
Yeah.
When one
the odd
would
thing
hear
is,
it,
I wrote it the day before 9/11, 2001.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that.
No, I was in Los Angeles on a writing trip from Nashville, and I was with a, you know, a pretty high-end writer, you know, a guy who's had hits, And we sat down to write some, you know, up-tempo dance thing that we could take into a record company or flip out. And instead, we wrote this beautiful song about someone going out the door and not returning. And then the heartbreak that follows is obviously about someone dying unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the irredeemable loss that the singer is voicing. And we wrote it on the day before 9/11. And we sat around afterwards going, why did we write that song? We both loved it, but we thought it was absolutely useless in terms of commercialism because, you know, people, you know, turn in ballads, really. You know, everybody wants up-tempo rockers. So the next day, the planes hit the building, and I knew why the song had been written. And
amazing.
I had to drive back. I drove back my rental car from Los Angeles to Nashville, and my son was working in the World Trade Center at the time, my older son.
Oh,
and
my.
We couldn't find him until that night. That was a long day.
Oh, my goodness. What a story.
Yeah.
Alex, your music is wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
Thank
it
you
touches
so much.
The heart, the mind. And it's really just wonderful to have had Sherry contact me because this was sort of an impromptu, last-minute type of a thing that we did, and I'm so glad we did it. Alex, what is your website where people can find out more about your wonderful music, the songs?
Well, I also want to mention my wonderful book.
Oh!
I have, I have written a book. It's just out now. It's called 8675309 Jenny, the song that saved me, and my website is www.8675309jennybook.com. You can also find me at www.alexcall.net. And that explains about my music and about the book. And I'm out touring with the book right now.
Well, Alex, it's been
thank
a
so
delight. You have to send me
music.
The book.
My music doesn't get played enough, I'll tell you that.
Well, we shared some of it today, and I'm so delighted that you were able to join us. I wish you the best on your tour. And
thank you so
tell
much.
Sherry she's got to send me the book.
I will.
All right, sir. You have a
thank
very
you,
successful
thank you, Donna, so much for having me on. It was nice talking with you.
It's been a joy. This is
okay.
Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Check out Alex's music. Go to www.8675309jennybook.com. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And I know we've got a caller on the line, 888-627-6008. Let's take that caller right away. First name or initial, and where are you calling from? And thank you for waiting.
They just hung up.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Apparently the person had to wait, and so they just hung up. If you want to call back, give me a buzz. Before we close out the show, I wanted to share with you a story that is from Sherry Rosen, and it was about 9/11. And she was requested recently to speak on a panel regarding the event. Of course, it's coming up on Sunday. And the panel was going to speak after a performance of a play called Orange Alert. And this play in New York is all about people's experiences before, during, and after 9/11. And it's going to be running in New York City until September the 18th. And she said to the person that asked her if she'd be on the panel, well, my story's a little different. You probably won't be interested. I went to live at Ground Zero after the event. He said, this is amazing. Most people were running away, and you end up moving into Ground Zero to live. He said, that's an amazing story. So this is Sherry's story. She said her oldest son, along with his girlfriend and her young son at the time, they survived 9/11. They were headed into the direction of the World Trade Center at about 8:40 a.m. when they realized that a crowd of people were running towards them away from the buildings. Her son told her, he said, Mom, we saw things that no one should see in their lifetime. Now, she wasn't able to hear from him until 12 noon of that horrific event, and she had no idea whether he was dead or alive. So the very next day, she took a train into the city from New Jersey, where she was living at the time. She was the only one on the train. When she got out onto the streets of New York City, nobody was around. But what she did was go directly to where her son and his girlfriend worked. She wanted just to find out that they were still alive. And she said, I got to thinking about the 7 years that I lived in Ground Zero because 9/11 changed the course of her entire life. She said, I had no plans of living there. I was going to move back to New York City from central New Jersey in 2002. I planned on living in Gramercy Park. That's where I belonged, but then a real estate broker who was a friend of mine told me about some apartments in Ground Zero, and would I take a look at some of them? And she said, I did, and to my surprise, I received what I can only refer to as a calling to move down there and try to help heal the community and the neighborhoods, and that's what I did. I became friends with a gardener, Richard, of City Hall Park. So Richard takes care of 8 acres around City Hall Park, and she said, I learned a lot about him, about what was in the garden from 9/11 and about the Memorial Grove at City Hall Park, where 6 or 7 trees that survived the attack at the World Trade Center were replanted in this memorial garden along trees that survived the Oklahoma bombing. We call this place the Green Cathedral. And while she was living there, she became an interfaith minister and part of a tremendous community called Tribeca Spiritual Center. There was an associate, Reverend William Grant, that worked with her, and another person, Reverend Salima, who was the other interfaith minister that took part of developing this dynamic trio. They gave services to the community every other Sunday within the doors of the Hallmark Senior Residence in Battery Park. And in Manhattan is where TSC used to be, but after this horrific event, it lost its space because the school was so badly damaged. They were meeting on street corners, helping their neighbors organize, meeting in the bubble lounge, and eventually were asked to be in the Hallmark Senior Residence. She said, it is something. I have many skills. I am a publicist. I took my publicity skills and booked my different people that I loved to help people assist those that were going through trauma. She said, simple things, but things need to be told when we're suffering from trauma. A group of us set up a trauma hotline right after the event for anyone that was in trouble and needed help. So the gentleman that asked me to be a part of the panel really opened up for me how my life changed when I went to live at Ground Zero. I will never forget. That's a real story. Sherry Rosen is a publicist, and Alex is one of the people that works with her, and we had the joy of interacting with all of them. It's very important to understand that life is for the living. Life is here and now, and things do happen. But when we look at 9/11, try to remember that out of this tragedy came absolutely awesome, awesome demonstrations of heroism, of the wonderful strength and capacity of the human spirit. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow you'll be hearing Tom Sawyer. This is a friend of mine. He is the person that wrote for Murder, She Wrote, as well as the producer of Same, so you'll be hearing that broadcast. And I'll be back with you live on Monday morning. God bless. Have a fabulous weekend. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.